This is episode 118 of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, Preventing Pressure Ulcers in Nursing Homes. The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hello out there and welcome back to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And you have happened to stumble across a very interesting episode today. We're going to be talking about a medical condition that is unfortunately can be common in residents of nursing homes, and that is the problem of pressure ulcers. That is to say, wounds that develop due to oftentimes prolonged pressure to a certain point on the body.
Right.
But again, we are not going to be talking about this particular subject alone. We have went out into the ether and pulled back into this show an expert in the field on this. So she's going to be joining us. And Will, before she joins us, can you tell us a little bit about her?
Right. So we'll be talking with Martha Kelso, and she is the founder and chief executive officer of Wound Care Plus, WCP. She's a visionary and an entrepreneur in the field of mobile medicine. She's operated mobile wound care practices nationwide for years. She enjoys educating on the science of wound healing and how practical solutions apply to healthcare professionals today. Kelso enjoys being a positive change in healthcare, impacting clients suffering from wounds and skin issues of all etiologies. Kelso's desire to make healthcare a better place for consumers motivated her to form and found WCP, Wound Care Plus. In her early career, she was a wound nurse in a long-term care setting, and this past experience committed her to educate other fellow wound nurses on regulations and national standards of wound healing, thereby empowering the bedside nurse with tools and knowledge. Kelso has educated thousands of healthcare professionals since her education efforts began, providing a solid base and foundation to excel with wound care, practical application skills, or wound care oversight. So we're very honored and privileged to have her here today.
Nurse Kelso, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. Good morning.
All right. So, Martha, we are really happy to have you on today. We've had several episodes about pressure ulcers. Sometimes we call them bed sores, and we've maybe kind of gotten in the weeds on sometimes. And we wanted to have you on is kind of give from your perspective and your experience with wound care over the many, many years that you've been doing it, your take on pressure ulcers and pressure ulcer preventions within the skilled nursing facility setting. But before we actually even get into that, like, what is, from your experience, your education, your standpoint, what is a pressure ulcer?
Yeah, that's a great question. A pressure ulcer is where skin has become damaged. It's almost always over a bony prominence, but it doesn't have to be. The skin can become damaged from having pressure prolonged to a specific part of the body or from different forces like friction or shearing. And so shearing is where we are maybe dragging the skin across the bed, for example. And so you have the bed forcing the skin to go in a different direction and can actually cause damage to the underlying tissue. And so in a generic standpoint, pressure, prolonged pressure removes circulation from the tissue, and then the tissue can become damaged from lack of blood flow. So it's kind of the treetop version of what a pressure ulcer is.
That makes sense, because I think to the extent that our audience has an understanding of what a pressure ulcer is, I think it's a misconception that a pressure ulcer comes about only because of extended pressure, right? Because that's where it gets the name. And a lot of people don't realize that shear can cause it, or even sometimes if instruments can cause it, like a cast or
Medical device.
Exactly. A medical device of some type. And so that's a misconception that it's just pressure, but that makes sense. And what in the skilled nursing facility setting, why do you think that the nursing home resident is susceptible to bed sores and pressure ulcers in the first place? Like, what, why don't we hear incidents of pressure ulcers like in people's houses?
Well, I think that's also a great question. You know, wounds, generically speaking, are a barometer of health. And so generically speaking, healthy people don't get wounds. And there's a lot of factors that play into the predisposition for development of pressure ulcers. And so everything from being cognitively impaired, you know, not knowing or having the wherewithal to be able to turn or reposition yourself, realizing that maybe I've been sitting in one place for too long, so I need to get up, get moving, or, you know, even comorbid medical conditions, things like diabetes, hypertension, thyroid disorder, kidney disease, all play into your skin not being healthy enough to be able to maintain itself. So it's at higher risk for breakdown. Of course, urinary and fecal incontinence plays into that. Reduced meal intake. Oftentimes, medications predispose us to develop wounds, or maybe even delay wound healing once we get a wound. And so I think there's a lot of factors that go into it. Yes. And then additionally, if we're not doing what we should be doing, you add all those factors together, and then maybe we're not turning them like we need to be, or getting them up and moving off their derriere when we need to be. That, of course, elevates our risk as well.
And there's a couple of conditions that are often, in our line of work, confused, at least initially, with bed sores or pressure ulcers. Can you talk about the difference between diabetic ulcers or venous ulcers and bed sores?
Yeah, there's a lot of conditions out there that mimic pressure wounds, and that's part of the challenge. I would say, you know, even with my company, about 90% of our wounds are misdiagnosed when they get to us.
Oh, wow.
And so there's a lot of wounds that have been called pressure that aren't pressure. Mm-hmm. Sometimes moisture-associated skin damage lesions are misdiagnosed as pressure wounds when they're not. We have had cases of Marjolin's ulcers, which is actually a form of cancer. And in the elderly, if you're going to have a Marjolin's ulcer, it's usually going to be where there's been repetitive sources of inflammation. And mm-hmm. So it's where they would have urine and fecal incontinence. But because people don't realize that Marjolin's ulcers exist, we're not getting them biopsied and checked for cancer. And they do mimic pressure wounds. They look identical.
Gotcha.
And so from a global perspective, if you think about how many pressure ulcers exist in the United States, it's about 25% of all wound types. So about 1 in 4 wounds are actual pressure.
That's
Additionally, about 60% of wounds have mixed etiology. Mm-hmm. So you can actually have a wound that's diabetic, has venous, has arterial, and pressure components. So you actually have to address all 4 issues at the same time in order to get a wound to heal. Mm-hmm.
That's a really interesting point. And to go back to what you said previously, I think it's a big misconception when we get potential clients, family members of loved ones that have what they consider pressure ulcers. They're kind of shocked to realize, well, I've got a list of questions for you to determine whether or not there's any problems with the care that they received, because they don't realize that diabetes, vascular disorders,
cancer,
all kinds of things play into whether or not that wound could have been, you know, prevented, regardless of, you could be in space and that wound would have happened. You'd mentioned a minute ago about the, incontinence. You listed a few things of the reasons why that would heighten the likelihood of a pressure ulcer in the skilled nursing facility setting. Why is with regard to incontinence, why is that a kind of like a danger zone in itself?
Sure. Anytime you have a wet skin, right? And you think about even your children, actually. You know, when you hang out in the bathtub too long, you get kind of that bathtub effect where your skin wrinkles. And so it reduces your skin's ability to handle friction or shearing forces. So somebody that perspires a lot, maybe a more obese person that perspires a lot, or even has developed a fungal infection from being too moist for too long, all of those reduces the skin's ability to stay intact. And then especially when you're having to turn somebody or move them, it increases the, it actually decreases the skin's resistance against those shearing forces. And then you think about, you know, feces, for example, has acidity in it. It's coming from our stomach or from our colon. There's, it alters the skin's pH. The bacteria in our stool can also decrease the skin's resistance to not break down. And so it's interesting because it's, you know, 2019, which is super fun. We're living in a fun age in the medical arena because there's so many great products on the market now. You know, for example, there's a company that developed a barrier wipe, essentially, and it's synthetic. It goes on the skin, stays in place for up to 7 days, but it allows sweat and moisture to come through it. It doesn't allow urine or feces to get to the skin. Mm-hmm. And that's groundbreaking. You know, additionally, there's some overlay mattresses. It's a device that you put on top of a mattress. It's powered. There's a, you know, a fan, and it evaporates the moisture from our skin. Even if we're a heavy wetter, it evaporates in a matter of minutes so that urine or, you know, liquid feces is not staying next to our skin. The challenge is some of these products are new, and so they're not well recognized yet in the medical industry, but they do exist.
Yeah, I think that on our podcast we had talked about one time this new fabric technology. There's new sheets mm-hmm. that they have that cut down mm-hmm. on shearing. It's amazing, but not widespread at all.
Yeah. So, Martha...
And I will tell you, in October of 2019, in long-term care, CMS is requiring buildings to answer, how are you addressing the microclimate? And microclimate is that word for, how are you addressing the moisture problem mm-hmm. between skin and surfaces? And it's going to be an expectation now.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. Yeah. Most of the places mm-hmm. that we deal with don't address that at all, and
mm-hmm. and that's actually a good point, Martha. Yeah. What, in your opinion, what are some of the not stuff that's cutting edge or that's a couple years old? What are some of the tried and true things that family members, when they walk in to visit their loved ones, where in their instance a care plan has indicated they are at a moderate or high risk of developing pressure ulcers, what are some of the tried and true mechanisms to prevent those wounds that are just, you know, basic?
Yeah. So, you know, somebody that you know can't get up and get moving easily, it's important to identify what kind of surface they're sitting on, or if there's other things that we can do to help them get off their pressure area for a few minutes, you know, every few hours without necessarily having to transfer them. And so there's a, you know, tilt and space, tilt and space wheelchairs, for example. And they're designed to recline by, you know, 30, 40, 50 degrees. You can recline a resident or client and let them sit reclined for 10 or 15 minutes. And that's more than enough time to get the blood restored and moving mm-hmm. in the area that they're sitting on, without having to transfer them to a recliner or transfer them and have them lay down in bed. Mm-hmm. When I become a resident in long-term care, I'm not going to want to lay down much. I'm going to want to see what's going on. I don't want to have to take a nap if I don't want to take a nap.
Right.
You know, additionally, there's pressure-relieving mattresses that can go in wheelchair cushions. There's dressings on the market now that have a pressure relief indicator. So even if you don't have a wound, you can put this dressing in place, and it helps redistribute the pressure. Broda's been around for a long time, but Broda wheelchairs are designed to have a pressure relief surface, again, so that people don't have to get up and don't have to move if they don't want to. It allows them to be mobile as they desire to be mobile. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in 1940, there was a study that was done about turning people every 2 hours. At the same time, it was done in 1940. And, you know, the entire United States didn't even have electricity in 1940, let alone the same mattresses or the same beds, right? Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's still the standard of care. So.
Oh, absolutely. And so are you suggesting that it's outdated at this point, or that there are better things that
yes.
we can do?
Yeah. Yeah, in my opinion, the turn every 2 hours is very outdated. Yeah. At the same time, we haven't come up with a better standard of care yet.
Right.
So it doesn't mean you throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
I got you.
That makes sense. Martha, let's fast forward a little bit. Let's say that unfortunately a pressure ulcer has developed. What are some of the most common techniques used to treat and heal the pressure ulcer? And I guess a basic question is, is a pressure ulcer, depending on how advanced it is, can it be healed?
We see a lot of wounds, and it honestly depends on the rest of the resident's body, the rest of the client's body. Mm-hmm. Do they have enough tissue stores to heal? How's their protein? How's their intake? How's the rest of their body? And then how bad is the wound? Is the bone infected? You know, osteomyelitis, the gold standard is surgical bone debridement with 6 to 8 weeks of antibiotics and a possible course of hyperbaric. If they're not a candidate for surgical debridement, it may not be a wound that can heal. And they do take time to heal. You know, we're dealing with a sick person, a non-healthy person to begin with, or they wouldn't have a wound. I would, you know, just on average, thinking about our company, about 80% of pressure wounds can be healed. The other 20 within a reasonable amount of time. The other 20% takes longer. Again, it's 2019, so we have access to things like platelet-rich plasma. We've developed a skin graft that's 100% painless and doesn't leave a scar. And so I always say there's really no such thing as a cookie-cutter wound, but the more tools you have in your toolbox, the easier they are to heal.
So talk about debridement for a second, because we have that in all of our worst cases.
So there's, I'm guessing you mean sharp debridement. There's numerous kinds of debridements, you know, biological debridement like maggot therapy. There's enzymatic debridement like Scantol or collagenase ointment, mechanical debridement, autolytic debridement. Advanced wound specialists will use sharp debridement. In long-term care, the current federal regulation is that you can only do a subcutaneous debridement, which is the level just below the skin. You cannot do muscle or bone debridement in long-term care. That was a standard set by CMS a handful of years ago. And so if it's a provider coming out to the nursing home, they can only debride down to the level just below the skin. Otherwise, the resident has to be transported to the hospital. Sharp debridement is currently the gold standard to remove necrotic, non-viable tissue quickly and get the wound from a stalled-out phase into a healing phase.
Right. And is that considered a first resort, a last resort? Where does that fall within the range of treatments that are options?
Anytime you have non-viable tissue, SLEF or SBAR in the wound, it's not healthy tissue, so there's not adequate blood flow going to that part of the tissue, and so it harbors bacteria. And so the goal would be to get that tissue, non-viable tissue, out of the wound as quickly as possible. But bedside nurses cannot sharp debride. It has to fall to a practitioner, a physician assistant, or a doctor. But it would be one of the first considerations of getting the wound to start healing. Additionally, though, you have to know what wound to debride and what wound not to debride. So if a wound is on the heel of a foot and there's not good blood flow, you would not want to sharp debride that wound because it's just going to destruct. It's not going to heal.
Yeah.
There's not enough blood flow there, enough oxygenation and nutrients to start filling it back in. So you need to check blood flow and make sure that you are debriding the right type of a wound. A pyoderma type wound, it's contraindicated to sharp debride or cut into it. Malignant lesions, contraindicated. And so it kind of goes back to, how do you know that the wound is a pressure wound?
That's a good
question. Did you walk in and find it and then just go, well, look, it's over a bone, so it must be pressure. Arterial wounds occur over bone.
So how do you know?
Well, you would assess somebody and see if the wound is directly laying on a pressure point. So you have to observe the patient or the resident when they're in their wheelchair, when they're laying in the bed, when they're laying on their side. If pressure is not there, you don't call it pressure. And that's the current CMS standard today. It actually says, for the purposes of coding, determine that the wound is not related to pressure and that other conditions have been ruled out. There is no diagnostic study in the world today that can prove that a wound is pressure. But for arterial wounds, we can order an AVI, an arteriogram, arterial Doppler. We have studies out there we can order that prove that a wound is arterial.
I see.
We have studies out there that can prove a wound is venous, or prove it's cancer, or prove it's pyoderma, or scabies, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Martha, so what are the ramifications of a pressure ulcer, other than the fact that that's an open wound on the body? What happens? Like, what are the complications? What are the dangers of the pressure ulcer?
Well, I think with all wounds, anytime you have a break in the skin, it's at risk of infection. You have a risk of it not healing. There can be increased pain, right? It can deteriorate and go down to bone. It can deteriorate and develop gangrene. May have to put somebody on palliative care or hospice if it's not healable, right? And so I think anytime that the largest organ of our body, which is skin, anytime there's a break in the skin for any reason, we're at risk for having complications. Of course, if it gets infected, we have to put them on antibiotics. We know antibiotics cause other complications like C. diff or multi-drug resistant organisms. And so the ripple effect is bad. We don't want wounds. We want to heal them. We want to prevent them.
That's really important what you said, that when I first got into this area of the law, that was one of the first conversations I had with one of our first experts in one of these cases, and I'd never thought about it that way, but it's exactly what he said, is that the skin is an organ. And I guess I hadn't thought about that since fourth grade health class, but I mean, it's an organ just like your brain, your heart, everything else. And if, you know, if you're, that organ is unhealthy, then I mean, you're susceptible to these wounds and it's dangerous. So Martha, in the few minutes that we have left in the episode, can you just give some advice to our audience, the family members of residents in nursing homes, on pressure ulcer prevention? Like, is there anything, what would you advise them do to make sure this doesn't happen to the loved one? And if it does happen to the loved one, you know, what should they do next?
Well, you know what's interesting? I do a lot of training and educating, both for nurses, physicians groups, nursing home industries, and of course, you know, family members that come to the presentation. But, you know, in the medical industry, I think, you know, it's 2019. It's like, gone are the days where, you know, doctors wear a badge that say, trust me, I'm a doctor.
Right.
We don't follow blindly anymore. Right. We shouldn't. I believe that patients and family members are in the driver's seat.
Yeah.
You know, you're in charge. It's your leg. You're attached to it, you know. So I teach people, there's really four questions, and you can plug it into any medical condition, not just wounds, but there's four questions that everybody should ask, right?
Mm-hmm.
Family members, administrators, DONs, wound nurses, we should all be holding each other accountable. And so the four questions are, why is the wound there?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Question two, how do you know? Right? Are you guessing? Did we do studies? Did you see pressure occur?
Yeah.
If you didn't, are we assuming? You know, how do you know so that we know we're treating the right condition, right?
Mm-hmm.
Question three would be, what's keeping it from healing?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they have an occlusion. Okay. Now, number four is, what are we doing about it?
Yeah.
They have an occlusion, so I've referred them to a vascular surgeon. Vascular wants to do surgery. They're not a surgical candidate. Okay, what are we doing about it? And so, you know, they have a wound. Okay, great. It's pressure. How do you know? We saw pressure occur. Okay, what's keeping it from healing? Well, we need to get their foot off the bed. We're going to float it with pillows.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Now what's keeping it from healing? Okay, well, it's infected. Okay, what are we doing about it? We've done a tissue culture. We've sent it off for results. We're waiting on those results. We're going to get them on an antibiotic. Great. And so just those four simple questions, I think, help hold us accountable. And if those, the answer is ever, I don't know, you know there's a breakdown in process.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Well, Martha, this has been extremely informative, and we're very glad that you're able to come on the show. Is there a way that people can maybe reach out to you if we also have ombudsmen, we have nurses that listen. I mean, if anybody out there wants to get in contact with you, is there a good way for them to shoot you an email or hit you up on Twitter?
We have thank you for asking. We have an email that's monitored by numerous people and other nurses in our company as well. And it's office@mywoundcareplus.com. They can go to our website at www.mywoundcareplus.com, or they can call our office at 888-256-3814. We're very responsive. We take wounds seriously, and we know it's somebody's loved one out there that may be suffering with a wound that needs answers. Additionally, nurses need education.
That's right.
Doctors need education. We all need education. I feel like knowledge is power.
Amen. Absolutely.
Very good, Martha. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you guys for the opportunity. Talk to you soon.
And just to reiterate, she was a little humble on the website, her website, which is mywoundcareplus.com. There are so many resources just perusing that. I mean, there's so many resources for you out there with regards to pressure ulcer prevention, pressure ulcer treatment. She was mentioning earlier before we were recording about how families can go to that website and download pamphlets to take to the nursing home that have questions listed out for you with regard to pressure ulcer prevention, which I think are very important on top of what she mentioned about the four questions that you should ask.
Yeah. Another thing that we were talking about off air is that a lot of the perspective and treatment and understanding of pressure ulcers is outdated. And we just don't, you know, even the measurement of staging is different from home health care to hospitals to nursing homes. So this is on the cutting edge of something that's extremely prevalent and important. So I highly suggest people to check out mywoundcareplus.com.
And just to reiterate that this month is Older Americans Month.
Yeah.
So celebrating all month. Older Americans, I guess that's 65 or over. I didn't deep dive into the research.
Yeah, I feel like it is. It's a senior citizen discount. Yeah.
Yeah. My mom was always like, you know, when she reached that age, she would always tell me like it was strange that like she would see 15% off without being told like off of her coffee. And she's like, why'd I get 15% off? And like, well, we don't want to tell you.
Yeah.
we just assume that you...
We assume
that you have now earned this discount.
Yeah.
But at any rate, and then on top of that, on Saturday, it's Visit Your Relatives Day. So all of you out there that have a family member that's in a nursing home, assisted living facility, knock out two birds with one stone and celebrating Older Americans Month. And Visit Your Relatives Day on Saturday.
And speaking of visiting relatives and older Americans, it's also somebody's birthday this month.
Yeah, my sister.
I'm sure she'll appreciate that.
Yeah, on Friday. Yeah. I don't know how old she is. She was born in 1971.
Okay, so she's 7 years older than us. She's like 47.
Yeah, something like
48.
That. Yeah. So happy birthday, KB. And so this podcast in general is available new episodes every Monday morning. You can catch us on our YouTube channel, our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, or you can download the audio and listen on your way to work, while you exercise, while you cook dinner, on Stitcher, Google Play, I think. I don't know what they call that now. It's not iTunes anymore. It's like Applecast. We have to update ourselves. Pod Puppies. Anywhere where you get your podcast from, we are available there and ready to rock. And with that, thank you to our guest, Martha Kelso, RN. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.